This is The Guardian.
In Norway, a woman's boyfriend forgets who she is overnight. In Detroit, a man is arrested, but he was never at the crime scene. In Spain, disturbing pictures of young girls have appeared, and no one knows who's behind them. Something strange is happening. A collision between people and artificial intelligence. Discover more in The Guardian's new series, Black Box. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. All episodes out now.
Looking for your next great podcast? We live in unprecedented times. To make sense of it, what if you could learn from some of the most influential people on the planet? The podcast Tools and Weapons is hosted by Microsoft's Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Every week, he has a candid conversation with guests, including prime ministers and Pulitzer Prize-winning journalists. The latest episode features Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though most of us know Bayer for pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science. They're putting digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre. Listen to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith, wherever you get your podcasts.
Science Weekly is supported by Rainforest Trust. In honor of this year's Earth Day, we're promoting Rainforest Trust's Brazilian Amazon Fund throughout April. Rainforest Trust is a 501c3 organization, which means that 100% of all money donated goes directly to conservation efforts. The fund has already helped protect more than 6.5 million acres of rainforest habitat, but Rainforest Trust still needs to protect a further 13 million acres to reach its goal. You can help. Donate online at rainforesttrust.org/earthday this April, and your generous gift will be quadruple matched for the Brazilian Amazon.
Over the past few days, there have been urgent storm warnings issued across the globe. Except, these aren't your average kind of storms.
Right now, the Earth is on a geomagnetic storm watch through the end of the day. Space weather forecasters say an outburst of plasma from a solar flare could interfere with radio transmissions on Earth.
Instead of thunder and lightning, a solar storm brings with it spectacular light shows, or what we in the UK would call the Northern Lights.
Aurora are caused by streams of particles colliding with Earth's atmosphere.
Electrically charged particles are caught in the Earth's magnetic field and directed towards the North and South poles. As the particles crash into the atmosphere, they hit atmospheric atoms, causing them to heat and glow. And depending on what kind of atom it is, oxygen or nitrogen, say, they'll shine in different colours.
And this glow is what is known as the aurora, or these beautiful dancing lights that we can see in the higher latitudes.
When big eruptions from the sun hit us, aurora can become visible as far south as the US Midwest and as far north as Australia's Victoria coastline. But it isn't just incredible views and pretty photographs. These storms have the potential to cause havoc.
They can disrupt power grids, cause blackouts on the Earth.
And right now, we're in a peak of solar activity.
As this magnetic field on the surface of the sun becomes very tangled, it can get wrapped up almost like a rubber band that as you twist and twist and twist, eventually it can't be twisted anymore and you have a snap or an explosion that occurs.
So today, how do solar storms work? How are scientists trying to predict them? And what would happen if a truly massive blast came our way? From The Guardian, I'm Madeleine Finlay, and this is Science Weekly.
The Earth is actually embedded in an environment that's created by the sun.
This is Dr. Lisa Upton. She's a solar scientist who's part of a group trying to predict solar activity.
first and foremost, there's this constant stream of particles and energy coming off of the sun. This is known as the solar wind. In addition, the sun can have eruptive events like solar flares or coronal mass ejections that can send larger volumes of energy and particles out into space. And as this solar wind and material from these eruptive events interact with the Earth, they can cause geomagnetic storms. And this is what's known as space weather.
Because of the Earth's magnetic field, we usually only experience this as aurora.
Earth's magnetic field is actually very helpful, and it kind of acts as a shield to protect us from all of this space weather. What it does is it catches the majority of that high energy particles and plasma, and it funnels it into the polar latitudes.
And while we can be hit by space weather at any point, there are times when it's more likely. The sun, a giant sphere of extremely hot, roiling plasma, goes through a solar activity cycle.
It may seem like just a ball of gas floating in the sky, not doing a whole lot. It may seem very quiet, but it's actually a very dynamic place. It's embedded with these magnetic fields that create sunspots or active regions over the surface of the sun. And over a period of about 11 years, the occurrence rate of these sunspots rises and falls, along with other types of activity on the sun. We are currently in the peak of that activity cycle in what is known as solar cycle maximum. And so this is the time when we're going to see the most amount of sunspots, the most amount of eruptive events coming off of the sun.
And while the origin of the sun's magnetic field, the solar dynamo, remains a mystery, scientists can watch this solar activity to gain an understanding of how it's changing.
We have the solar activity cycle that's caused by the evolution of this magnetic field. It starts with a very dipolar configuration, which is much like a bar magnet that you'd see a clear north and south pole. Well, the flows on the surface of the sun, they cause these magnetic field lines to become very, very tangled and to form a much more complicated structure.
Every 11 years or so, the whole field flips, the poles reverse, and the cycle begins again. But it's what happens in the period before that, the period we're in right now, that can be an issue for us back here on Earth.
As this magnetic field on the surface of the sun becomes very tangled, you know, it can get wrapped up almost like a rubber band that as you twist and twist and twist, eventually it can't be twisted anymore and you have a snap or an eruption or an explosion that occurs. When this happens, that snap, that eruption, that explosion can send large volumes of energy and plasma out into the solar environment. If that large volume of energy and plasma, which is known as a coronal mass ejection, is directed towards the Earth, it will actually interact with the Earth's magnetic field, causing the Earth's magnetic field lines to break. If the storm is strong enough, some of that energy and plasma can make it down actually to the surface of the Earth. These are geomagnetic storms.
The most intense geomagnetic storm ever recorded on Earth took place in 1859 and is known as the Carrington event, named after the British astronomer Richard Carrington.
This particular geomagnetic storm was so powerful that the auroras, which are typically constrained at the poles, were as visible as far south as Cuba. So at that time, the telegraph machines had just started to become pervasive, and this allowed communications across the ocean. So when this massive geomagnetic storm started interacting with Earth, the plasma streaming down to Earth's surface generated a lot of currents, and these currents actually caused the telegraph machines to go haywire. They started sparking fires to the point where a lot of the telegraph operators unplugged the telegraph machines, but found that they were still able to operate them because this geomagnetic storm was generating this current. I think one of the most interesting stories that I've heard, being here in Colorado, at that time there were miners up in the Colorado Mountains, in the Rocky Mountains, mining for gold. And they had settled in for the night. And when this geomagnetic storm hit the Earth, it caused these massive auroras. These auroras became so bright that the miners actually started breaking camp for the day. They thought that the sun was actually rising.
So what would a solar storm of that power look like today?
Our society now is so dependent on our electrical system, our power grids. And so if we had a massive storm like this today, it could cause massive disruptions to our power grids. It could cause damage, significant infrastructure damage to transformers that run these power grids. A geomagnetic storm of this magnitude would have the potential to destroy many of the transformers, which we don't really have a whole lot on backup because they are very expensive and they take a lot of time to build. And so we could see areas on the earth that would be without power for weeks or months or even years, depending on the severity of the storm.
A Carrington-like event is very rare, but severe storms can disrupt power networks and the satellites that provide navigation, surveillance, and communication services. They can also pose a radiation risk to astronauts and people in high-flying aircraft.
In space, you don't have the benefit of this protection of the Earth's magnetic field to shield you from these events. So astronauts up in space would need to make sure to go into a place where they would be shielded from these high energy particles. Certainly, the airlines are very interested in keeping an eye and monitoring space weather. In times of large geomagnetic storms, they will actually adjust their flight routes to mitigate the amount of radiation that their aircrew would experience. But all in all, that level of exposure is about akin to what you might experience receiving an X-ray at the doctor's office. So as long as you're not having it happening over and over again, you're not going to accumulate a whole lot of damage if it's just a one or two isolated times.
It's important to be able to predict when a storm might be coming, and many governments around the world take the threat of a big event seriously. In 2019, the Federal Emergency Management Agency found that there were just two natural hazards that could impact all of the US at once: a pandemic and a severe solar storm. That's why Lisa and other scientists like her tasked with monitoring the sun's weather and its cycles.
Part of that is trying to predict the amplitude of the cycle. How big is the cycle going to be? But it's also a little bit of the timing. So in that, we are really more getting a sense for the rates of activity, how many geomagnetic storms we might expect over a given time period. We're a bit like where the weather forecasting industry was about 50 years ago. They could kind of give you, some rough probabilities, but they wouldn't necessarily be able to very specifically tell you when that next shower might hit. So we can tell you, we might expect a certain number of geomagnetic storms in this period, but we're not necessarily going to be able to tell you down to the day when that eruption is going to occur.
Lisa hopes that eventually the data, science, and modelling will develop enough so that they can help us all be better prepared.
So that if there was a large geomagnetic storm on the way, we could let people know, hey, electrical grids, you might want to, power down for a minute to, shield yourself from this geomagnetic storm. Or airlines, you might want to divert your flights to a different path. And even satellites, you can adjust orbits. So there definitely are mitigation strategies, some things that can be done to help protect those resources. It all comes down to being prepared, to having that advanced warning, to increasing the time frame that we have to be able to get that message out there so that the people that need to make those decisions can make those decisions in a timely and effective way.
But there are still a lot of questions left to answer.
This is such a relatively new field. It's really only been since the dawn of the space age that we've really been able to get enough data, enough observations to really start to unravel the mysteries of the sun, to start to understand these processes that are taking place. And so as a solar physicist, there's lots of discovery space, lots of things that we're still trying to understand. The solar dynamo problem is one of these. And in particular, I'm focused on trying to use helioseismology data to give us a better sense of what's happening on the far side of the sun. Most of our solar observations are coming from this sun-Earth line. They're from spacecraft that are in orbit about the Earth. And so there's this whole other side of the sun that we're not seeing at a given moment in time. And really, you know, that adds a lot of uncertainty into the various models that are used to make these kind of predictions. And so using various techniques such as helioseismology kind of gives us a window into what's happening on that far side of the sun, allowing us to make better predictions and to give that advance warning we need to be prepared for these geomagnetic storms.
A big thanks to Dr. Lisa Upton. And that's it for today. This episode was produced by me, Madeline Finlay, and Holly Fisher. It was sound designed by Joel Cox, and the executive producer is Ellie Bury. We'll be back on Thursday. See you then.
This is The Guardian.
Looking for your next great podcast? We live in unprecedented times. To make sense of it, what if you could learn from some of the most influential people on the planet? The podcast Tools and Weapons is hosted by Microsoft's Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Every week, he has a candid conversation with guests, including prime ministers and Pulitzer Prize-winning journalists. The latest episode features Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though most of us know Bayer for pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science. They're putting digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre. Listen to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.